The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, welcome in on this Friday night as we take you through the fastest 2 hours in radio at YSR. And we are inside the Quicken Loans studios. And the big weekend, it is finally here as the 2014 college football season, it is underway. And it is time now for us to get some answers on a number of important questions. Certainly a ton of speculation on which four teams will be playing in the inaugural college football playoff. The debate continues. But our first order of business this evening is going to be to head to the Big 12 Conference. We want to talk about some of the matchups. One in particular is with the Oklahoma Sooners. They're set for kickoff Saturday night at home against Louisiana Tech. Always a pleasure to welcome back a familiar friend of the Big East Sports Show, and that is the senior writer with OU Insider and KREF 1400 in Norman, Oklahoma, the one and only James Hale. How are you, James?
Oh, I'm doing great. The only negative is this is radio, so I don't get to see your pretty face, but it is always great to hear that voice, and that always brings back great memories of one of the most beautiful women ever to play for the OU women's basketball team. So it's always great to talk to you.
Oh, you always make me feel like a million-dollar bill. Well, James, we say goodbye to the BCS, and that's the first time since 97 the BCS will not be utilized this season, instead giving away to the college football playoff. And one of the most consistent teams, of course, were the Oklahoma Sooners throughout the BCS era. Yeah. In fact, they were ranked number one in the weekly BCS standings more than any other team, in fact, 20 times. So what are your expectations from the college football playoff system this year?
Well, I still think Oklahoma would be a strong team in it. If you can be a strong team to be in the top two all those times, then your formula should work to get you into the Final Four, too. So I think Oklahoma is one of those elite programs that you can, you know, pick to be one of the contenders to get into that, and that's kind of how the BCS has gone as well. Now, I didn't hate the BCS. I thought the BCS was a lot better than the old voting in the AP and the UPI. At least you could lose later in the year and still have a chance to get into the national championship if everybody had lost. It wasn't whether or not you'd lost early or late. And I thought that was the problem with the old polls on how the AP and the UPI, you know, were voted in. So, you know, I'm looking forward to this. I think it's juiced college football. I think it's revitalized it a little bit. You know, we have more off-the-field issues nowadays because we have more media working and the social networks and things. And, you know, fans are now media, too, and so they see something going on at a restaurant or a bar or wherever, and they're going to post it, and all of a sudden it goes viral. So you're finding out more and more things about players and coaches in college football. And yet, college football has never been more paranoid with programs, you know, shutting off practices and things with, you know, fans and media. So you have both things going for it in many, many different ways. That just brings along speculation and people guessing on things, and coaches don't like that, but it's kind of the root of their own evil. So I'm looking forward to the season because the Final Four will give us a really cool situation in late December and early January when it comes to college football, and put college football against the NFL on its biggest stage, because I got to believe that the semifinals will be as big as what's going on in the NFL with playoffs. And I'm a college football guy, so I'm going to think that. I know it's going to be can't-miss TV, and, of course, the national championship game, especially when you have to win another game to get there, is going to have an added significance to it.
Okay, so the college football playoff is going to send the top four teams. Who have you deemed as your top four?
Well, one of the teams was Ohio State. Now they've lost Braxton Miller, and Oklahoma tried to recruit JT Barrett, so I know a lot about him, but he hasn't played any football. I think now Michigan State's the favorite in the Big Ten. So the way I look at it now, I've got Oklahoma making it there. I still have Alabama making it there. I'm going to take Michigan State and put them out there. And then, you know, I kind of wrestle around with things. And who do I think is going to win the Pac-10? Do I think it's going to be Oregon? Do I think it's going to be UCLA? And see, that's kind of a debatable thing. Do I think Auburn can be good again? You know, is Georgia really going to be a great team? You're going to find out when they take on Clemson on Saturday. Clemson is another team that's kind of one of those teams you say, can they get there? So it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out. But I'm going to go ahead and put Oregon into the Final Four as well.
Wow. The senior writer with OU Insider, James Hale, is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We want to hear from you. Join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. So I want to back up for just a moment, because many had projected that Ohio State would potentially be one of those top four teams. Tell us a little bit more about JT Barrett, what this redshirt freshman.
Well, he was gifted enough at OU, was thinking about going to the run-pass game at the time, you know, got in on him early, and then he takes a visit to Ohio State and commits to him, and that was that kind of foiled that plan for OU. They thought, man, he's right down here in Wichita. Surely we can just go and get him. Mm-hmm. And, boy, he went to Ohio State, and he's really talented. He's slick. He's fast. He's going to remind you of Braxton Miller. I think he's a better passer coming out of high school than Braxton was. And so he'll be a capable replacement. And here's the thing. Urban Meyer has been really good. Go check his track record, E.
Yeah.
He's been good with rookie quarterbacks coming in big spots, and they've often still led him to championships. So he manages this about as well as any coach, has a proven track record in doing so in college football. And so you don't rule him out. And Michigan State does have to replace some of their defensive side. You know, they had the best defense in college football, I thought, last year. Yes, I thought it was better than Alabama's. And, you know, I thought it was really, really good. Now, they've graduated several, and you got several players complaining about how tough those defensive coaches have been on them, but they expect to be great on defense. But they're going to be better on offense than they've been in the last couple of years. Now, Iowa could be there. Nebraska has a great running back and two or three great players, but they've lost so many guys on defense in their training camp, it's hard to pick them in the Big Ten. So I'm going to pick Michigan State now that Ohio State's lost their quarterback. And I had Ohio State winning before Braxton Miller went down. So I am making a minor change there, but I think that's going to be a really competitive conference this year.
Do you ever see two SEC teams making the playoff?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, you could see that. But I can see two out of any conference, to be honest with you. It's not just the SEC. I know the SEC has had a great run. It was stopped last year, but they still have been the dominant conference in college football. But you know, I cover Bob Stoops, and of course he's gone after the SEC pretty good. But I listen to what he says. He's a smart football guy, and you know, and like for instance, in the Pac-10, what if UCLA and Oregon only lose one game apiece?
Right.
That's two pretty good football teams. Why couldn't two from there go in there? Or let's say Baylor only loses to Oklahoma, and they beat everybody else. And let's say Oklahoma goes undefeated, or let's say Oklahoma loses to Baylor. And Baylor goes undefeated. Why couldn't two teams in the Big 12 make it? You know, you look at strength of schedule, but the SEC is not really strong all the time in strength of schedule. So the only reason that you would think that, and I know your question's directed this way because of the success the conference has had in the national championship games. For the most part, that's been Alabama. And, of course, Auburn made the run last year, and Alabama hasn't been the only team, but that's kind of the way that's been the bell cow of the team. Remember, Bob Stoops nicknamed them the Big Bad Wolf, you know, going into the Sugar Bowl.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think two can make it from the SEC. But I think, look, if you're going to get the four best teams, you can't just look at every conference champ. Who are the four best teams in the country? That's all it comes down to. And if two of those are in a certain conference, that's the way it is.
Okay, we are so glad you're joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. We want to hear from you on this opening weekend of college football. Join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. Having a wonderful, always a fabulous conversation with James Hale, the senior writer with OU Insider. So here's a question for you, James. Does the Big 12, are they at a disadvantage, the fact that they don't have the absence of having a title game?
Well, I've asked a lot of officials about this, and everybody has mixed opinions on it. So I think this is really one of the true things in college football that we have to wait and see. We don't know. I talked to Joe Castiglione, the outstanding director of athletics at OU, about this. And Joe is one of the leading thought makers, I think, in college sports. And he really doesn't know. Now, the Big 12 has been adamant about not adding teams and not adding a championship game because they don't want to split that financial pie anymore. So they feel like if you go through the round-robin schedule, which they always pump as an advantage in terms of the RPI and how you play football in this day and age, because remember, in the SEC, not every team plays everybody. And so it comes down to, you know, do you get lucky in your scheduling or not? Well, in the Big 12, there's no luck about it. You're going to play nine teams. And if you schedule like Oklahoma does with a marquee game and then a pretty good game and then usually a team that you can handle pretty well, that has been a recipe to get Oklahoma in the BCS talk in the BCS finals when they are, you know, the conference champions. So it's going to be interesting to see if not having the national championship game. Now, the Big 12's been smart. When the other teams are having their conference championship games, OU or the Big 12 is playing a big game on that day. This year, once again, it will be Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. Last year, they had two different games. And the general thought is, as long as you're playing in that first week in December, people forget about the fact whether it's a national champion or a Big 12 or a conference championship game or not. They just know it's a big game. And often, when that game is played by the Big 12 or those two games, it has something to do with the conference championship. That's why they put those teams at the end. And this year, OU will play Oklahoma State on that 7th, and so that's going to be a huge game. And because they're playing that way, maybe that conference championship game or the lack of one won't hurt them. But I really don't know, E, and I am really curious to see what happens at the end of the year because they're not playing a Big 12 championship game.
We're zeroing in on the Oklahoma Sooners with James Hale from 1400 KREF and the senior writer with OU Insider. We got to take a commercial break. We'll be right back with much more at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Join us online at Twitter at eRadio. Okay, we're breaking it all down and getting you ready for the big, big weekend in college football. Joining us is James Hale, the senior writer with OU Insider, and from KREF 1400 in Norman, Oklahoma, does an outstanding job. And before we break everything down in terms of with the Sooners, how much is the pressure building for Oklahoma to win a national championship?
Well, I think it's always prevalent, and I think Bob has felt it. And I think, you know, remember, you know, and again, you know, Bob is just one of those coaches that's cut out, you know, the fans from going to practices and things, and he doesn't deal with fans much on a personal basis, and you know, and so he's kind of buttonholed the program, so fans don't really feel close to the program anymore, so they're a little more agitated when you haven't won a national title since 2000. Now, he's been consistently good. I mean, he's actually has the best winning percentage since he's been at Oklahoma, I think, of any other coach in the country. Well, he certainly, you know, I believe that's correct. And so the fact that he consistently wins kind of keeps him off the angry block, let's just put it that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, people don't stay as agitated with him. You know, but the last 3 or 4 years, the Big 12 has gotten more competitive, and Oklahoma has only won once in a Big 12 championship in the last 4 or 5 years. So he's still winning games, and he tied for the conference championship, or you know, and he didn't win the conference championship, and he goes to the Sugar Bowl, but they still went to a big game. All right, so that's been something that appeases Sooner fans, but. Yeah, I think they're ready to win again, but he's ready to win again. He talks about it all the time. He says, you don't think I walk by the photographs of Bud Wilkinson and Barry Switzer and realize what company I'm in? And I realize what, in my own record or my own tenure here, we've fallen a little short because both of those coaches won 3 national championships. He goes, you don't think I don't know that? Mm. And so he's just being realistic. I mean, he's just being honest. Yeah, he knows it. And, yeah, they're ready to win again. Are the natives restless? Not necessarily. You know, but this year's team has great expectations, E. And if they don't win this year, I think you'll hear about it at the end of the year.
Well, certainly very big expectations on the quarterback, Trevor Knight, and he has provided some clarity with the position and solidified that. Do you think he will live up to those expectations? Because he really was something special in the Sugar Bowl last year with that MVP performance.
I don't know if he'll play Sugar Bowl good or not. Mm-hmm. I think he'll play close to it and at times reach that. I don't think he's going to have those terrible games that he had when he first started at quarterback his freshman year. First, he's a year older. He's had all that bowl prep. You saw what that brought him in the Sugar Bowl. Now he's had all the spring. He's had all the summer. He's gone to the Manning camp. He's done so many things. He's just a lot better player. The last scrimmage The last open practice, we did get to go to that as a media, and he looked great. I mean, he looked right on, spot on, checked down to receivers, did a good job of getting in and out of plays, getting plays on the sideline, looked like a confident, experienced quarterback. And only has 1 year out of his under his belt, but that's still a lot sometimes in the growth of a quarterback. He's really, really good, and I think he's going to have a great year. If he doesn't have a great year and he struggles again, then I think OU struggles. If he gets hurt, I think OU struggles. Their backup quarterback has never taken a snap, so that's one of the priorities, to get Cody Thomas on the field early in the year so he gets a few reps. But as long as Trevor stays upright and he's got a great offensive line in front of him, as long as he can stay on the field, I think he's going to be really good.
James, you're such a great evaluator of talent. Do you believe, though, that he can perform at that level consistently? Because obviously we were, you know, so encouraged by his phenomenal performance under pressure when the lights were the brightest last year in the Sugar Bowl.
I can tell you for a fact that the coaches, almost to a man, said the way he played in the Sugar Bowl was more like how he practiced and won the job over Blake Bell that year than how he played at the start of the year. In other words, when he didn't fire and he didn't play well early, they were puzzled. But they also realized, and Bob has talked about this a lot lately, that when he struggled early, the team struggled early. The line didn't block as well. The wide receivers didn't get open as well. And a lot of different things went wrong. Remember, the offense just didn't fire a lot early. Even though Blake won a big game on the road at Notre Dame, you know, they had a big defensive play in that game from Corey Nelson. And, you know, they had some other things happen. So the offense really didn't gel until probably the Kansas State game. OU would have been very competitive in the Baylor game if they would have had any offense whatsoever. And they tried to play both quarterbacks there. And by Josh Heupel's own admission, that was a terrible game plan, and it just didn't work out.
Great way to kick off tonight's show with James Hale, the senior writer with OU Insider, right here at YSR, the Big East Sports Show. James, you stay cool and enjoy the game Saturday night, and we will, I promise, talk to you again real soon.
Hey, it's probably only going to be 100 degrees. I'll give it a shot.
You'll be sweating while you sit in the shade, babe.
Absolutely.
All right, much more straight ahead tonight at YSR. Okay, the Big East Sports Show rolls on at YSR. We are inside the Quicken Loans Studios. It is now time for us to head to Lincoln, Nebraska, and visit with our NFL, our college football analyst, and that is Jason Peter. And as promised, we were talking about this last week, it is time to totally focus our attention on the Big Ten Conference and his Nebraska Huskers. How are you, Jay?
I'm good. Can you believe it's here already?
Yes, I know it's here because it is so incredibly hot down here in Houston. But thank God it's Friday night, so it's nice and cool inside the studio. So talk to me about your Huskers, because they have had a really strange streak. They've had, what, six consecutive four-loss seasons. And I just got to give us the skinny on how do you think this season's going to play out?
Yeah, your guess is as good as mine. Everyone's kind of hoping that this is the year they get over the hump, but then there's also a large part of the fan base that really has lost interest. And that is like the scariest thing, I think, for a Nebraska fan that you can imagine, because through it all, whether it's Bo Pelini, Bill Callahan, Frank Solich, Osborne, Devaney, you name it, there's been one common theme, and that's that the fan base is always there and always supportive and always salivating, you know, this time of the year. And you don't get that vibe heading into the 2014 season, which is a little scary. So, you know, I think Pelini also realizes that this year they need to do something. I think when you go back and you look at the post-game press conference after Iowa last year, he looked like a guy who thought he was getting fired. There was certainly a lot of stuff that happened over the course of the year, but towards the end there in the Iowa game in particular, when I talked about it last week with, you know, taking the hat off and swinging it in front of the referee's face, that everyone thought was kind of, you know, the last straw. And he got another shot, was able to coach the bowl game, and now, you know, back for another year. But I don't know if 9 wins will cut it again. So he needs to do something. He's crossing his fingers that he can stay healthy throughout the year, which every coach is during this time of the season. Yeah, right now it's all go, all systems running, you know, at high speed come Saturday afternoon.
Okay, Jason, so I'm totally stunned by your statement. I mean, you're saying that the fan base has lost interest, and you're thinking perhaps this is leaning more towards the coach and just what has transgressed over the past few years, or is it something that the team is lacking?
No, I think a lot of it is directed at Pelini. And let's face it, I mean, all the problems that have fallen, upon Husker football aren't necessarily his, but as a head coach, as a guy who makes $7 million a year, ultimately the buck stops with him. And, whether you like it or not, and it's, I don't know if it's just at Nebraska, but, it's a cutthroat business. Now, guys aren't making, $250,000, $500,000 a year anymore and winning national championships. You know, the guys that are first-year coaches at smaller schools, are getting paid $1 million a year to start. So there's a lot of pressure. I just think that the coach is always the easiest finger to point at. I just think that they've had issues from players and recruits not panning out, as every program does. I'm not making excuses for Nebraska. I just think that it's been so long now since Nebraska has won a conference championship, let alone played or been in the hunt for a national championship. And, you're seeing a change in the fan base as well. The people that sat in the stands when I was playing in the 90s, a lot of those people have now passed their tickets along to their children or given them to somebody else.
Right.
Some of those fan bases, they're finicky. They're not as loyal as, say, they were back, when I was playing. But it's also easy to be loyal when you're winning national championship after national championship. But it'll be interesting to see. I'm sure the stadium's going to be sold out. I'm not saying that, 50,000 people are going to show up for the game. It's going to be sold out, as will the entire season. But I just think that the frustration level is at an all-time high right now.
Okay, so let's get into some of the X's and O's. Jason Peter, Husker Great, is with us at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. We always love going up close and personal and talking with him about his Huskers. So, we know defensively you were a part of that Husker dynasty, a key player that won so many of those championships. Talk to us about defensively what we can expect in terms of with this team in 2014. Is this a blue-collar type of team?
Well, I think defensively they have potential. It's a young group. There's a lot of guys that are not battle-tested, and whether that's because they're young, freshmen or just getting into the system, junior college transfer, or whether it's because Pelini hasn't done a great job, I think, of giving depth game experience. That's always got to be a priority as a head coach, that you have to get, even your second and even third team guys into the game. You got to get them those game reps. Otherwise, when it's their turn, you don't know how they're going to react. So whatever the case may be, he's got a young defense, but, he's got guys that can run. He's got big guys, that can clog up the middle. Guys that played periodically last year are now going to go into a full-time role. And, it's a lot different being a defensive tackle when you can come in for 2-3 plays at a time and then you're off, and then maybe you're coming in a couple series later for another 2-3 plays. A big difference between playing a game like that and playing a game as a starter, where you're going series after series, then maybe you get 4 or 5 plays off, and then you're back in again for another 2-3 series. That is a complete, it's, you almost can just throw away what happened you know, last year when a guy got in just for, you know, a handful of plays as opposed to being a starter. So there's some guys that are going to be kind of forced into those roles, and you just don't know what you're going to get until, you know, the product comes out of the oven.
Okay, we're talking Big Ten football this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show with Jason Peter, hitting on the strengths, the weaknesses, specifically zeroing in on things defensively. Tell us about Randy Gregory right now. He was an All-American candidate in the preseason.
Yes, and he was a junior college kid last year. He came in, he was a sophomore, he's got two more years to play, and could really get after the quarterback. You know, when you look at the whole package, you know, from game one to the final game of the season, you look at Randy, and there was a few games in there where he wasn't as dominant and didn't really show up the way that people had hoped. And unfortunately, those were against players that were of high caliber, you know, the left tackles that were the kid from Michigan, another kid from Iowa, a kid from Penn State. You know, they were the best guys that he played against, and those guys were able to get after him pretty good. Now, he dominated some guys that were you know, of average talent. And, you know, you put 2-3 sacks up on a guy like that, and you have a few games like that before you know it, you know, you're in double-digit sacks, and you're an All-American, and now you're, you know, projected to be maybe the number one draft pick in 2015 draft. And it's just kind of, it's mind-boggling a little bit. But don't get me wrong, raw potential. And if he could figure it out, you know, from top to bottom, and be able to take all that stuff he's learned in practice and put it against, you know, those top-notch guys and be able to execute it, you know, then I think you got something special, because he's a guy that you have to account for, especially on third down and throwing situations.
Okay, Jason Peter has been with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, and since we were talking about the Big Ten, we were talking about your Huskers. Next week, I promise, we will talk about Ohio State, because it's going to be very, very interesting to see how their season is going to play out now, especially having a freshman quarterback. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Much more straight ahead tonight at Y. Okay, we're inside the Quicken Loans studios on this Friday night as we continue to cruise through the fastest 2 hours in radio. We want to hear from you. Join us at Twitter at eRadioSports. And right now, let's pack our bags. Let's head up to Dallas. Let's check in with our Yahoo Sports Radio correspondent. That, of course, is Lance Rinker. I want to get the pulse on the Dallas Cowboys and find out how he believes this year's narrative is going to play out for the version of the Cowboys. Good to have you with us tonight, Lance.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you so much, Melissa, for having me on.
Absolutely. We've always got a lot of ground to cover. And last time you were on the show, we discussed how the Cowboys might be able to emerge from this 8-8 rut that they have been in over the past couple of years in order to move forward and achieve that. What needs to happen?
Well, it all starts with defense, specifically the secondary. Now, with the suspension of Orlando Scandrick, he's going to miss the first 4 games of the regular season. And so last night's preseason game, the final preseason game, he got a good bit of action in, as expected, because he's going to come back, he's going to be rusty. So basically what that means is we need Brandon Carr, Morris Claiborne, to really step up and do their job and live up to their potential, which we haven't really seen in the last few seasons. And then we need bubble roster guys like Terrence Mitchell, who sort of has that swagger and says that he wants to be the best quarterback on the team. We need him to step up and prove that.
Well, there certainly was massive worry coming into this season, as you were talking about defensively, and to be able to, they've got to clean up a number of things. Talk to us about some of the other difference makers, like Henry Milton with him being on board. I mean, that was a very big signing.
Oh, it absolutely was a big signing. I mean, that helps, you know, both sides of the ball out tremendously, actually. You know, helps the defense out for the presence there and whatnot, and it helps the offense out because, you know, his ability to make big plays will help take some of that pressure off Tony Romo and the offense, yeah, because this offense, it's going to be a top 8, top 10 offense, easy. I definitely envision that as long as Romo stays healthy. I mean, you've got Dez Bryant, you've got Terrence Williams, who looks like he could put up a big season as a clear number 2, in my opinion, and all. So basically having guys that can make those big key stops, especially say on third down on defense, that's going to be crucial for this Cowboys team.
You know, I know the Cowboys already in the preseason, they've had to deal with a number of injuries. Give us an update, since we're talking about defensively right now with Melton. Give us an update on him in terms of with this groin strain that has kept him out.
you know, they're really taking it easy on him. They're not trying to rush him back or anything. Really, the goal is to make sure that he's ready to go week one or very shortly after that. They don't want this to be one of these lingering things throughout the season. Because as we see with pretty much any player in the NFL, where they suffer some sort of groin injury, there's a clear difference in performance between those that try to rush back and those that are given the proper amount of time to heal. Those that rush back, it becomes a lingering issue. So all of a sudden, week three, week four, they're down again, they miss a few weeks, and so it's one of those things where they want to make sure that he's 100% and ready to go, period. And if Coach Garrett doesn't feel that he is 100%, they'll hold him out week one.
Our Yahoo Sports Radio correspondent providing all the insight on the Dallas Cowboys, Lance Rinker, is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big East Sports Show. Hey, we want to hear from you as we're having this Cowboys conversation at Twitter, at E-Radio Sports. Talk to me about, since we're zeroing in defensively right now, what makes Milton such an effective defensive player? I mean, when I think back at his time in Chicago, I mean, when you have teammates like a Brian Urlacher or Lance Briggs, I mean, that's huge, that kind of experience.
Yeah, well, and that's the big thing with him, is his football IQ. He's such an intelligent football player, especially defensively. Right? He understands pre-snaps reads. He understands what's going on as the play develops. So not only is he going to always be in the right spot on the field where he needs to be, but he can identify what the offense is trying to do, and he can actually help get his teammates along the line there in better position to make his plays.
And hopefully,
that's the impact that he's going to have.
Yeah, I was going to say, and hopefully there's going to be that carryover of experience to impact the other Cowboys defensively. Who else do we need to be keeping our eye on that could really be a serious difference maker?
You know, I think Morris Claiborne, this could be the year he really steps up. I mean, it's pretty much a make-or-break year for him, I believe, anyway. He's going to be looking for that big contract extension here soon. And so this is kind of a put-up-or-shut-up year for him. Brandon Carr, the same thing. But I believe Claiborne has that talent to really ascend to a degree to where, you know, he could be that guy in the secondary.
I want to continue to break down a number of the key positions for the Dallas Cowboys. But my question to you now, Lance, is when you step back and you look at the Cowboys, I mean, it is hard to believe they just had one playoff win since 1997. Is this a franchise that we can expect to be in the hunt for a Super Bowl? I mean, when is this going to happen? I mean, I'm going to be honest with our listeners. I mean, I love the Cowboys. I've been a longtime fan.
Yeah, Neil, I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. They're in a very weak division, so they still have that puncher shot of winning the division. And, you know, I'd say 8-8, maybe 9-7 if they can get there. You know, because the Washington Redskins, they've got pretty much the same issues the Cowboys do, except they also have a serious issue at quarterback with Robert Griffin III. And, you know, he just has not looked very good when they've been trying to develop him to a more traditional pocket passer. The New York Giants have issues all over the place. The Philadelphia Eagles right now they're my pick to win that division, but you know they'll probably do it with 9 wins. So the Cowboys, they've got a shot, but they need some serious bounce back seasons from pretty much everybody in the secondary. You know, the linebacking core took a hit when Sean Lee went down, and so they've been dealing with all sorts of injuries along the defensive line as well. Just guys being banged up, so nothing too serious. But what's really going to help propel them to division title winners is essentially the defense staying healthy all year long, because they do not have a whole lot of depth. And so 8-8, yeah, maybe that's realistic. I could even see them falling to 7-9. But it's kind of like they've got this little pendulum swinging where, you know, they could win a range of anywhere from 6 to 9 games, I believe.
Yahoo Sports Radio correspondent Lance Rinker is joining us tonight and, of course, giving us all the skinny on the Dallas Cowboys. So it sounds like, I mean, that you're confident that they can at least match up with any of the teams in the NFC East.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that wouldn't be hard to do this year. So that, you know, the NFC East has traditionally been a very strong division. And, you know, you started to see certain teams taper off in the last few years. The Giants were the last team to do it. The Eagles, you know, they're going to have that high-flying offense. But their defense is one of the worst in the league as well. So, you know, the Cowboys, the opportunity is there for them to take hold of the division. But they can't really have too many missteps. They can't lose these games where they put up 28, 30 points.
Okay, so we hit on things defensively and perhaps projecting the forecast for the Cowboys this year. Talk to us about, give us an update on Tony Romo. I mean, where is he at in terms of his health? And do you still consider him an elite quarterback?
He's 100% healthy. Coach Garrett is certainly taking a more cautious approach with Romo, as we've seen through the preseason, not leading up to the regular season, but what else would you expect with, you know, a quarterback 34, 35 years old? But Romo, you know, I don't know if I would consider him necessarily elite, but I would put him in basically at the top of the line of that second tier class of quarterbacks. You know, he's one of these guys where, you know, if I were a franchise and I needed the quarterback, I would certainly look at Romo and say, you know what, this is a guy that I think could actually take us to the playoffs if you've got the other pieces necessary to make that playoff run. You know, and the Cowboys, they've got the pieces together on offense. They've got a fantastic offensive line, which they've been building very diligently over the last few years. So it's always been the defense that's been holding them back ever since Garrett's become the head coach. But Romo, he is fully healthy right now. He's going to have plenty of weapons at his disposal to use this year.
Well, I have to wonder, is he going to feel any of the effects from that back surgery? Because I even know going into the preseason, there was some chatter, some speculation that the back surgery, that it affected his deep throws, that his deep passes were not quite as good as they used to be.
Well, and part of that, and it makes sense that that would be, you know, a result of the surgery, is because when you have that surgery, you've got all those muscles in that area there, which you haven't really seriously worked out the way you normally would. And so you've got to build that strength back up, especially in your core and your midsection, which you're really able to get that torque and sort of that oomph behind the ball when you throw it as a quarterback. And so while his arm might still be strong, his legs might still be strong, I wouldn't count on him being able to launch the ball 40 yards downfield with as much accuracy as he used to have. So, thankfully, he's got a big giant target in Dez Bryant. We've got an emerging wide receiver in Terrence Williams, who I'm just completely in love with right now. Dez Bryant, he could put up a big season this year.
So, how good is Dallas going to be offensively?
Oh, man. 26 to 28 points on average.
Wow.
I mean, I think these guys, they're always going to have the potential to put up a touchdown, no matter where they're at on the field. You know, that's how high on the offense I am. I mean, we're looking at a top 8 offense at least.
Well, they better be good because they got to make up for a defense that right now is kind of banged up. Give me a hit on my boy DeMarco Murray, my Sooner.
You know, Murray, I think he could take that next step and prove that he's just not some sort of flimsy little running back that, you know, he gets knocked around, he's down on the ground too much. So I think he's going to put up another big year for the Cowboys as long as they use him. Yeah, and when I say use him, I don't mean like, oh, all right, they're down by 3 points and they decided to throw. It's, you know, or we've seen where they're up by double digits and they still throw. As long as they use him effectively and for the purpose of what he's there for, I could see him putting up 1,400-1,500 rushing yards and probably catching, you know, 300-400 yards with a few TDs.
Always a Big E favorite, our Yahoo Sports Radio correspondent, Lance Rinker, giving us the rundown on the Dallas Cowboys. We appreciate you dropping by tonight on this Friday night. Thank you so much, Lance. We'll talk to you again real soon, okay?
Thanks so much, Alyssa. Take care.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead at Y.